Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and Yassine Ahmed with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's live stream. Hey, Yassine, how you doing today?
Scott, I'm doing great. As always, looking forward to our conversation.
I am too. You always are part of some big conversations here at Supply Chain Now. It's great to have you back for another big one here. Because folks, today is The Buzz, where every Monday at 12 noon Eastern time, we discuss a variety of news and developments across global supply chain and business. News that matters is what we like to call it. Now, The Buzz is powered by our friends over at DOS, who have been on the move here lately. It's the world's first adaptive resource platform. If you want to learn how DOS gives companies real-time visibility into their operational data and connects it seamlessly to the financial systems that run their business, you can visit DOS.com. Okay, Yassine, let's see, big show teed up here today. We got the latest on the Strait of Hormuz. We're going to dive into that. Everybody's probably tired of that phrase, but it's not going away anytime soon. We'll touch on AI readiness training. Does it work? It might be a little counterintuitive part of our discussion here today. Cargo theft, blowing up. Are your supply chains secure? We'll talk about it. All of that stuff and much, much more. And in about 15 minutes or so, we're bringing in a special guest. Danny Ramon with Overhaul is going to be joining us. You're going to enjoy Danny's perspective on cargo theft and much, much more. Now, we got a big show here today, as I mentioned, Yassine. Have you had your Wheaties? Did you take your Flintstones vitamins? Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to rock and roll. It's actually a very exciting conversation. And when I saw the lineup and that Danny's going to be joining us.
All right, man. You and me, we might be second cousins, you're seeing. We think a lot alike. Really quick, Trisha is wishing happy Buzz Day to all. Say hello. Let us know where you're watching from. Do that, please, folks. We like to connect the dots. This is a global conversation, as supply chain discussions should be. To that end, our friend Alan Jacques is here today, the pride of Ottawa. Alan, I hope I've got that right. I should know this by now. I saw Alan's been on the move at Logipharma, if I'm not mistaken, not too long ago. So Alan, I know you're having some big conversations. Also, Trisha has dropped a link to DOS. Go check out what our friends at DOS are up to. Okay, Yassine, we've got four things that we want to dive into before Danny Ramon joins us, okay? And I'm going to start with one of my favorite things, and that is the latest edition of With That Said. Now, check this out. Look at all these wonderful people that we interviewed at MODEX. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Look how cool, calm, and collected in the face of global disruption that they can stay. You see, that's a pretty good snapshot there, huh?
Yeah, smiling through the disruption and the stress from all of these geopolitical disruptions, right?
They are maintaining cool under pressure. So in this edition of With That Said, not only did we mention a couple of key takeaways from MODEX, which was a great show. Stay tuned for tons of coverage in the coming weeks. But in this edition, we led with some of the developments across industries, such as fuel surcharges and annual rate increases in first quarter 2026. All that led to what the TD Cowen AFS Freight Index said was a record high quarter for ground delivery costs. To combat higher costs everywhere, of course, organizations are leaning more and more into AI. We touched on Tractor Supply Company. Seen they have really refined their approach when it comes to how their team uses AI. And this targeted approach has led to improved forecasting, inventory flow, and employee productivity. Google made a big recent commitment to invest in the U.S. manufacturing workforce. At this, they're contributing $10 million to the Manufacturing Institute to help train 40,000 manufacturing workers on essential AI skills.
Wow.
So folks, all of that and much, much more, dive into this edition of With That Said. You'll also find our upcoming events, especially our live events. You don't want to miss that. Let's see, Yassine, did you miss this edition of With That Said, or did you dive in over the weekend?
I'm an avid reader. I always look forward to the publications. I think one of the pieces that I really enjoyed in this week's article was the declining rates, or kind of the automotive shift. So affordability when it comes to new vehicles, and that consumers are looking for vehicles that are exceeding or less than $50,000. So I thought that was quite an interesting read, especially in my capacity as the president of the Electric Vehicles Organization of Colombia. I think that it is a sentiment that a lot of consumers are feeling.
I'm with you. And by the way, you wear lots of hats, Yassine. I'm convinced you got a couple clones out there, given all that you do. But to your points, It's fascinating to keep up with the automotive industry. And of course, it's such a critical sector of global business that impacts so many things. And to your point, I think the average cost for an automobile here in the U.S., $51,000 last year. And to your point, especially with where we're seeing cost increases everywhere else, we're looking for some deals in the automotive world. Is that right, Yassine?
Yeah, no, definitely. Especially now with all of these disruptions, it's the sourcing of critical components yet again that we saw during COVID that's going to be driving up the prices of these vehicles. And so we've also seen a shift to locally manufactured vehicles. So yeah, hopefully the prices do decrease, but for the foreseeable future, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that's a good prediction. All right. So that's the first of four things right quick. Alan is confirming. I knew it was Ottawa, Alan. I knew, and I should know that by now. Let's give us a weather report up there in beautiful Ottawa. Awais is back with us. Hey, Awais, great to see you. I think he hails from Pakistan. Let us know what part of that beautiful country you're in. I think I've got that right, but great to see you here. All right, so number two on my list. Let's see. We're talking about one of my favorite times of the year, Yassine. It's National Supply Chain Day. That's right, April 29th, every year, National Supply Chain Day. Please join us at 12 noon for a virtual event that's going to be featuring a wide range of supply chain leaders. Our keynote is the amazing Billy Ray Taylor, author of the best-selling book, The Winning Link. Lots of stories from his mama, which I love. Miss Vera keeps it very real, very actionable. We're also going to be recognizing three incredible people and or organizations. We got to keep it kind of ambiguous for their significant contributions towards our industry. Join us 12 noon, April 29th. Yassine, is this on your calendar?
Yes. Marked off since last year. Keen celebrator of National Supply Chain.
That's such an elegant way of putting it. A keen celebrator of National Supply Chain. Yassine, I could listen to you read a phone book, I think, with your...
I can return the compliment straight back to you, Scott.
All right. And Tricia is making it easy, folks. She's dropped a link. Go check it out and come join us and bring your thoughts and perspective. One of our favorite parts. Let's see here. That was number two. Number three, folks, we were just talking. Modex was last week. Your hardworking Supply Chain Now team had a full plate or two. Well, there's no rest for the weary, because in a couple weeks, we got Gartner Supply Chain Symposium and Expo, May 4th through the 6th down there in Orlando, which I bet is already heating up. And folks, if you hadn't been to a symposium yet with our friends at Gartner, you're missing out. Check out what Sarah mentioned here. Quote, amazing conference that has shown time and time again, it's worth its cost 10 times over. Now you see, I got to break out my calculator or my abacus maybe, but if it's a 10x return on investment, I think that's not a bad deal. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, like, who would turn that down, right?
That's right. Folks, come join us, and Trish is dropping a link right there. Also, I spy T-Squared, who holds down the fort for us on YouTube. Bring on the nourishment, T-Squared says, and the beef barbecue and slaw. T-Squared, we're going to have to duke it out maybe about our barbecue preferences. We'll see. Yassine, are you a fan of barbecue?
Coming from South Africa, we've got our own type of barbecue. It's called brine, different type of flavoring and seasoning to the meats. But when I came to the U.S., Texas barbecue has changed my mind. I absolutely love
it. You know what? I can appreciate how Texas barbecue changes your mind. You come to Georgia or South Carolina, and our barbecue will change your life. So let's make that happen, Yassine, okay?
Definitely.
Hey, we love debating barbecue. It's one of the best, tastiest debates to have. All right, one more thing before we bring on a great guest and Danny Ramone. And Yassine, the one thing we talk a lot about, we get a lot of questions around, is optimizing supply chain careers, right? A lot of folks looking to be promoted up through their organization, or they're looking for a new venture, a new opportunity. And I bet you've seen, since you lead Luna, I bet you've seen a million resumes from supply chain professionals across the globe, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And my resume back in the day, I'm sure, will be part of the ugly category. So let me ask you this, a real practical question. What are three key tips for supply chain professionals looking to optimize their resumes out there, Yassine?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And, you know, to your point previously, we've seen resumes from across the board, experienced hires, non-experienced hires from different regions, from different functions. So when it comes to kind of three strong tips, kind of just keeping it very simple, is, you know, quantifying your impact with hard numbers, right? So not just describing your responsibilities, but really showing results and including metrics tied to things like cost savings, reduction in service levels. And then secondly is really showing where you can create value across the supply chain. So show that you've got some sort of end-to-end supply chain relevance and make it clear where you sit in the value chain. Is it in procurement? Is it in planning? Is it in logistics or warehousing? This really just kind of helps you and positions you as someone who understands the broader system. The third one is use role-specific language and tools. Do you use things like Excel, SAP, Power BI? Do you understand S&OPs? All of those kind of good aspects and assets to a resume really make you stand out to an employer.
I like it. Yassine, those are three very been there, done that, actionable tips for folks out there. I would add one more. When you send your resume out, rather than sending out for folks to distribute it for you, because everybody asks for that, try to target someone, a hiring manager or someone that can really give you constructive feedback, right, on your resume. Now, we all know AI is disrupting this industry, right? And maybe you can ask an AI bot for its feedback too, but lean into that critical feedback, right? Because I'll tell you, Yassine, from my perspective, because I've done it, I've made the mistake. We have 7-page resumes in some cases, right? And no one's going to read it. And so much of it doesn't matter, right? We got to be succinct to the point, and it needs to be a living and breathing document. Your final word here, Yassine, and then we're going to bring on our guest.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And, you know, look for the hiring manager, look for someone that works at the company that you're interested in, and just ask for a quick conversation to see if there's kind of keywords that you can insert into your document that kind of reflect the culture and the way that those teams operate. Because at the end of the day, it will be a hiring manager that takes a look at your document and they want to see those flavors translated accurately.
Well said. And even if you don't get the job with one hiring manager, get that feedback. That's a gift oftentimes. Even if you're not going to get the gig, get the feedback, right? So good stuff there, Yassine. I really appreciate that. Good afternoon from Scotland. A bit late to the party. Apologies. Let me know who this is, Trisha and Amanda. And hey, at least you're here, my friend. At least you're here. Better late than never, as they say. We've got a great guest, Yassine, joining us here today on The Buzz, powered by our friends at DOS. Annie Ramon has been working in supply chain security for over 15 years, and he's been specializing in supply chain intelligence for the last 13. He studies both cargo theft and any factor that can affect the flow of cargo through the supply chain to identify how variables might interfere with that critical flow of global logistics. And I'm here to tell you, he is on a mission to spread awareness of cargo theft as well as promote supply chain visibility across the globe. And thanks to that mission, he's been quoted or published in tons of leading industry publications. That's why we have to have movers and shakers right here on The Buzz, Yassine. Please join me in welcoming Danny Ramon, Director of Intelligence and Response with Overhaul. Hey, hey, Danny, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me. How are you doing? How are you doing, Yassine?
Doing great, Danny. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Same. Same. And we're doing great. We had a great weekend. It's a productive weekend. And Danny, I know what it's like down in Austin, and I don't know what it's like where Yassine is. We'll find out where he is in a minute. Here in Georgia, it is cold. It's brisk today. I love it. It's like an early spring day, but that 117 degrees is right around the corner. Danny, what's it like in Austin?
It is Texas cold in Austin right now, which means about 70 degrees.
Okay.
It's muddy weather for us.
Okay. Good, good. And Yassine, where are you at? And what's, is it cool, hot, what?
I'm calling from New York today. The weather needs to make up its mind. It's been boiling hot and then freezing cold and then windy, rainy. Just really looking forward to the summer weather.
We need some weather certainty is what you're saying, Yassine. Well, hey, this is Felix. Felix is tuned in from Scotland. Well, great to have you here today, Felix. Looking forward to your perspective. And Awais, yes, thanks, Scott, for mentioning Pakistan, a beautiful country. We're feeling proud to host a peace talks between United States and Iran. We're very thankful for what you and your wonderful country is doing, Awais. So thanks so much for being here. Looking forward to your perspective. Sahar, freezing here in D.C. Well, hey, I get a jacket. Hey, the conversation is going to heat you up. And to that end, before we get into topics, important stuff here today, Danny, I got to start with a little fun warm-up question because, you know, I've been snooping. I've been preparing for today's show. I've been doing some reading up on your background, Danny. I've been checking you out. And something on your LinkedIn profile really caught my eye and stirred my curiosity because you served about a decade or so ago as a beer Sherpa in Austin. It's got to be the coolest role that one could have. Tell us what you did, Danny.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the coolest titles. I can't take credit for coming up with the title. That was my predecessor, Bob Galligan, who now works as a lobbyist for the Craft Beer Association in Minnesota. But I was essentially a craft beer tour guide, but not at any one dedicated brewery. We worked with all of the craft breweries around town, and I would kind of lead the bus doing 3 stops in a day at various craft breweries, nerding out with the people about the beer, of course, sampling it. It was a wild time. I got to actually tell people I was a professional beer drinker for a few years there.
Oh, Danny, that is such a great gig. And I can only imagine the stories you can't get to here today. Yacine, I'm not sure if you've ever had the opportunity of being a beer Sherpa, but what's one of the coolest roles you've ever been a part of?
I mean, I don't think I could match Danny's position there. I think a lot of my friends would be very envious of that role. But yeah, I think one of the coolest positions that I had was during COVID. I was down for a couple of dollars. And so I had a friend that ran a restaurant. And so I was chopping up onions and cooking cheesesteaks for a couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. You know, everyone should work in the restaurant business. I think the world and society would be a much nicer place. But to Yacine, we'll have to make me hungry with that one. Between the beer and sandwiches, man.
Yes, and sandwiches. Yeah.
All right. One last comment here before we dive in. T Squared says, here in Georgia, can't go outside with a parachute. You're going to be airborne quickly. And before you know it, that's right, it's been windy up and down the East Coast here lately. So stay safe out there, folks. All right. So getting to work here on The Buzz, powered by our friends at DOS. I want to start with the latest of what's going on across what is now perhaps the world's best known supply chain choke point, right? The Strait of Hormuz. And again, big thanks to Wyatt and Pakistan for helping letting cooler heads prevail. But as the AP reported earlier, this morning, the U.S. attacked and seized an Iranian-flagged cargo ship over the weekend that was said to have attempted to evade the ongoing naval blockade. This, of course, threatens to disrupt the ongoing negotiations towards an end to said conflict. I tell you, it's like Groundhog Day, right? A movie with Bill Murray. You know, it's on again, off again, on again, off again. But all signs say that the Strait of Hormuz, at least as of an hour or so ago, is still officially closed again. But a vessel here and there has attempted, and some have succeeded passing through the waterway, with an Indian-flagged oil tanker doing so on Saturday. That is very few and very far between. We're going to see how this week unfolds. But you know, Yacine and Danny, in recent weeks, we've touched on a variety of ramifications related to the shutdown of traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, beyond the obvious being oil, which of course touches everything. So we have touched here on The Buzz on helium. We've talked about fertilizer, but there's so much more, such as naphtha. I hope I'm saying that right, Danny and Yacine. I had to slow down a minute because there's a few tricky syllables there. Naphtha. It's a critical input used to produce plastics, packaging, and a whole bunch more. And that has a ton of potential to increase costs across global supply chains everywhere, right? And did you think about aluminum? Japan Times has reported that it's going to take major producers in the Middle East at least a year to restore full production of aluminum. And that particularly impacts Japan, which imports about 30% of its total supply of aluminum from the Middle East. A million butterfly effects to track here, which is why global business has got to have some resolution to the crisis in the Persian Gulf. So Danny, your thoughts on what we're seeing, some of the ramifications, you name it.
It's really interesting how folks are discovering all the second and third order kind of knock-on effects that you were mentioning, right? As you mentioned, fuel touches everything, right? So yeah, everyone is like, yeah, obviously fuel prices are going up, but people don't think how that first domino is going to affect the next domino and the next domino and the next domino. Everything runs on fuel. Fuel is power, right? There are countries that require Qatari LNG in order to power their national infrastructure, right? And when that starts becoming limited or more expensive, obviously it's tougher for them to power some of their more power-intensive industries. One of the things I'm thinking is Taiwan. You know, Taiwan is responsible for 90% of global advanced chip production, right? They rely heavily on Qatari LNG for their energy needs. And if that goes away, you know, they've got to start readjusting. Another one to think of is Brazil, not huge in terms of production of fuel or anything like that, but they are one of the main global producers of refined sugar. And the sugar refineries, with a couple of minor tweaks to their processes, can be changed from refining sugar to producing biofuel, which they may do to offset rising fuel costs, right? And if that happens, then we're looking at a global increase in sugar prices. I mean, the amount of things that are touched seemingly goes on forever. And I have no doubt it would eventually reach on, like, the knock-on effects of this will be that all things rise in price globally.
All things rise in price globally. That is not good news, Yacine. What are some things you're tracking related to what we're seeing in the Persian Gulf?
Yeah, I think those were some excellent points that Danny brought up. I think my main concerns are kind of for the global South countries that have to kind of face the ramifications of these supply squeezes, especially when it comes to things like helium and kind of fertilizer, right? A lot of these farmers depend quite heavily on quality fertilizer to support not just their livelihoods, but their local communities. So I think we're going to perpetuate these kind of hunger, food insecurity constraints that we're finding right now in global South countries. So that's where my main concern is. But like Danny had mentioned, you know, Japan is having to cancel their international flights because there's no fuel for their aircraft, right? So these knock-on effects are being felt throughout the global ecosystem. And I think humans will always find a way to kind of make the most of their situation, and will always find a way to adapt. You know, just like how Danny had mentioned, you've got those sugar refineries that are going to be turning sugar into ethanol and into biofuels. Tough times create tougher people. And so hopefully we'll find maybe new ways to navigate this global ecosystem.
Well, and I'll put a book in on this conversation here with your last comment there, because Danny and Yassine, y'all might be seeing and hearing the same major theme out there. I think it was Winston Churchill or some politician that said, you know, you never let a good crisis go to waste. And I mean that very respectfully, right? Very seriously, because the great thing over the last year and some change, right, since uncertainty has really continued to skyrocket and disruption, is some of the leading organizations out there have taken this time to truly invest. And you know, what was that saying? Go still sharpen steel or something like that. I'm telling you, we're going to see tangible innovation come out of this year and a half. It's not fun right now, perhaps, but it reminds me of the phrase, one of my favorites, this too shall pass. It may pass like a kidney stone, but this too shall pass. Okay, on to our next topic really quick. Hey, Mr. Tomcat, great to see you. Thank you. I hope you are well, Scott, and the Supply Chain Now crew. So Mr. Tomcat, I'm putting you on the spot. He puts together some great supply chain haikus, Danny and Yassine. So we'll see if Tomcat can come through this time. Really quick, I want to touch on one other quick update before we continue with Danny and Yassine here on The Buzz, powered by our friends at DOS. And that is, as reported by Supply Chain Dive, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection is launching a claims portal today to process tariff refunds. We're going to track this story. More on that in the next few days. I think one prediction is it's going to be quite the herky-jerky process for many. A lot of folks out there are curious to see if that Supreme Court decision is going to be appealed. We shall see. So stay tuned on that. All right, so moving right along, let's talk about AI readiness training, because we all know that's how many organizations are attempting to navigate this era here in the golden age of supply chain tech. But let's talk about it in what may be a pretty counterintuitive way. CIO Dive shares that Docebo. Anyway, it's a learning platform, folks. D-O-C-E-B-O. It conducted its 2026 AI Readiness Gap Report and has recently released some key findings. 85% of employees say they can't apply the AI training that they've gotten directly to their day-to-day jobs. 56% of workers surveyed say they are overwhelmed by the pre-AI manual tasks, so their work. So they don't have time to learn the tools that are supposed to save them time. 78% say the training takes place outside of the tools they currently use, which really hurts the ROI of the training. One important nugget this article by CIO Dive points out, some of the AI readiness training out there may assume that every employee has the same basic understanding and acceptance of AI. That's an important fallacy, and it's got to be taken into consideration as you plan the training and plan your approach, especially as we seek to optimize successful adoption of new technology, which always seems to be an Achilles heel. So, Danny, when it comes to all things AI, and in particular AI readiness training, what are you seeing out there, Danny?
You know, that life cycle is really fast in AI. You brought up one point to me that really speaks out about what the employees were saying about their AI training. And that's like, I forget, some 70 some percent of them said that their training took place outside of the tools that they're actually supposed to be using for right. their job in AI. And that is, you know, one of those things. AI is just growing so quickly. I made this comment to a friend of mine the other day that AI is basically at about the thought processing level of like a 13 or 14 year old. This was about 8 or 9 months ago, right? But I was saying, like, what was scary about that is that a year ago, it was at about a 6 year old level. So it's going quickly. And now, you know, I made that statement about 8 or 9 months ago. It's probably at about an 18, 19, maybe 20 year old level again. It's been a while since I've talked to a teenager or a 20 year old. So I don't know where they're at nowadays. But it's just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's so scary fast. By the time you design and implement a training, chances are those tools are obsolete. It's got to be much, in my mind, and you know, I'm not an AI expert, and I'm not a process implementation expert, but it's got to be much more holistic rather than piecemeal focused, right? You have to like pick AI from a holistic standpoint. What is it? Understand it. Are you comfortable using it? If not, let's get you comfortable using it. Let's get you to understand why it's okay to use it and when it might not be okay to use it.
Yeah. Excellent points, Danny. I appreciate those. And, you know, the thing I'd add, and you'll seem to get your take here, is the survey, one of those nuggets was how much pressure that team members feel, right? They're overwhelmed. I've seen that's a very prevalent thing, especially in those organizations that don't have a targeted, effective approach to not just AI, but really all new technology. You've seen your thoughts.
I completely agree with both of your takes. I think that my concern is that with the rapid adoption of Gen AI and just AI in general, I'm under the firm belief that there's a bubble and that at a point in time, relatively sooner than later, there's going to come this realization that there's been a rapid inflation and just kind of mass investment into assets that don't necessarily make sense. I mean, we've seen Allbirds pivot from a sustainable shoe manufacturer to a firm that is now rolling out data centers and purchasing these AI assets and inflating their stock price by 600% in one day. So my main concern, like how Danny had mentioned, right, you've got these firms that are trying to play catch up, but in my opinion, I think that they're pouring investment into areas that don't typically make sense. And I think that they should be training their employees on maybe how to think instead of how to adapt to these tools that are rapidly advancing. I think that's where they would be seeing their return on investment.
Well said. And I would add to that aftercare, right? Meaning after said technology is implemented, aftercare, it's always been important. I think it's on a whole new level now, thanks to some of the stresses put on the workforce. Danny and Yassine, I want to tackle a couple of comments here before we go to where we're going next. Let's see. Going back to what we're seeing in the Persian Gulf, Hawaii says the war has triggered a global fertilizer crisis by disrupting shipping through Hormuz, stalling roughly 30% of global fertilizer trade. Goodness gracious. Now, Mr. Tomcat, he has stepped up to the challenge. Here's a haiku on the current oil supply chain woes. Crude routes, fray and stall. Logistics trace, new slow arcs. Inventory size. Well done. Well done. You came through once again. That's right. That's right, Danny. And finally, T-squared. T-squared always references Rudy. He's well known for it. And Rudy stands for the Referential Universal Digital Indexer from the Jetsons, right? It was that machine that had one button to do stuff. So he says, T-squared, imagine how the Rudys in the landscape are feeling when some are obsolete before it's fully leveraged. Oh my gosh, that's such a great point there, T-squared, that Danny referenced earlier. All right, one more story. This is going to set us up for the next segment of The Buzz here. Because folks, if you know me at all, I love my Kit Kats. So much so that my dear friend Jenny Froom had a pallet of Kit Kats ready for my arrival at Cape Town, back in the day, a year or two ago, which is why I can't believe I'm late to the story here from our friends at Confectionery News and many, many other outlets about the Grand Kit Kat Heist. Sounds like a Muppet movie or something. A truck carrying 413,793 Kit Kats evidently disappeared between the Italy production site and the shipment's destination in Poland. Nestle said in a statement, quote, "We've always encouraged people to have a break with Kit Kat, but it seems thieves have taken the message too literally and made a break with more than 12 tons of our chocolate," end quote. As of this morning, this heist took place in March, late March. As of this morning, don't see any update on the missing deliciousness, if it's been found or not, but many are reporting as to how this has become a PR masterclass for Nestle, turning lemons into lemonade. And kind of one of the things they're having fun with is I think they did a stunt here where they've got all this security securing this Kit Kat delivery. So they've had a little fun with a tough situation. Danny, this is right up your alley. What do you see here playing out with Kit Kat?
Yeah, I see the classic Michael Scott win-win-win situation going on here, right? They've really taken what could have been a relatively minor loss for them and an inconvenience, really, and turned it into more than the money that they lost in advertising, right? It's been great. It's been a story that's traveled for them. That's awesome. What I love about it is that they've also issued a Kit Kat tracker, because the Kit Kats that were stolen were actually shaped like F1 cars, and they were for cross-promoting with the F1 races. Apparently, Kit Kat is now the official chocolate of F1. I don't know how you work that, but in any case. So they actually put a tracker online with the heavy suspicion that these were going to make it back into the legitimate supply chain. And I fully agree with that. Thieves don't steal things without a way to make money from them. Going to have a channel to liquidate them. And so they put up a tracker where customers could check the serial number, the batch number, on their F1 edition Kit Kats and see if it was part of the stolen load, which is a cool interactive thing. It's going to make people go out and buy more of those Kit Kats to see if they got the quote unquote golden ticket and just have that cool story, right? But it also provides reverse contact tracing for their investigations team. Where did our stolen Kit Kats end up? What channels might they have traveled through, right? It's a masterclass, not only in marketing, but in post-event investigations as well.
Mm. We could focus this whole edition of The Buds on this one story, especially with Danny's expertise. Yassine, your thoughts related to the grand Kit Kat heist?
I thought I loved Kit Kats a lot, but I don't think I would. I don't think I'd steal 12 tons of Kit Kats from a truck.
Oh my gosh! Seriously, it's unbelievable, right? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we're gonna see. Kind of to Danny's point, that now the barcode is going to bring up a big red flag and warning. It almost made me feel guilty as I finished off my tail fin of the F1 Kit Kat I had this morning that I didn't pay attention to the red flag. So tip, only kidding. See, Danny was about to make a note of that, and authorities were going to be at my house. Kidding aside, we're going to see if it can be found. 12 tons of Kit Kats. Oh my gosh. Let's see here. Tomcat, how does one sell Kit Kats on the gray market? I don't know, especially now since they are going to have that red flag technology. Karai says, take a break. Cheers from Istanbul on the way to Athens. And now I want a Kit Kat. And that is, by the way, that is the Karai Koze. Great to see you, Karai. Look forward to your latest geopolitical eureka moments. And we need Inspector Clouseau on the case. We do, Tomcat. We do.
To the question of how do you get stolen Kit Kats back into the legitimate market, it's far easier than a lot of people assume.
Interesting.
You know, one of the things that's changed since COVID, especially stateside, and we're seeing it more and more in Europe as well, is the organized criminal landscape has changed, right? It used to be the traditional, you know, I'm part of the crew that's going to go steal a truck.
Right.
I was sent out there by my boss. My boss has a fence contact. The fence contact has distributors. Every person in this chain is taking a cut, right?
Mm.
Now we've got the criminal direct-to-consumer pipeline, where through e-tail websites, social media marketplaces, and major retailers, that allow third-party sellers on their website, it's much, much easier to move this product. It also changes the calculus of what's a worthwhile load to steal if you're all of a sudden collecting 100% of the proceeds rather than 20 or 30%.
Seeing we've got the right guy at the right time on the right edition of The Buds here today, and he's spreading the brilliance all the way around. That's right. Good points there, Danny. All right. So really quick, hold that thought, because the next segment is going to be, we're going to dive more into cargo security, or in this case, maybe cargo insecurity. So stay tuned on that, folks. But before we get there, I want to share one more note around our friends, Wiley Jones and the DOS team. Folks, in many cases, the ERP is broken. To fix it, DOS has created something completely new. DOS ARP is the adaptive application core that combines a modular system of record with no code forms and workflows, all to manage and automate core operations. And guess what? It deploys 3 times faster than most alternatives and speeds up every step of your value chain by 10x or more. That ain't bad. It's all part of the DOS operations cloud, which is unleashing enterprises everywhere. Kick the tires on DOS, take a demo, and you can learn more at DOS.com. Okay, as promised, Danny and Yassine, we're going to dive in a little bit deeper on all things cargo theft. And Danny, beyond our beloved Kit Kats, right? And Yassine's a big fan now too. What are some other of your, I'm not going to call them favorite recent examples, but other recent examples of cargo theft that you've been tracking here lately?
You know, there's been a lot of interesting ones over the last 2 years, 3 years, 15 years even. You know, about 3 years ago, there was a truckload of Cadbury eggs stolen in the UK in July, you know, well after Easter, but they eat Cadbury cream eggs all year round there. One of the big ones that I think has been, you know, making its way through mainstream media over the last couple of years is a tequila theft, you know, Guy Fieri, Sammy Hagar's tequila theft.
Right.
A couple of really interesting points about that one. One, how it differs from the Kit Kat theft. They stole aged tequila, right? You can't just fire up the production line and pump out another 2 truckloads of aged tequila.
It right.
takes time, right? So that obviously was a bigger impact for them. But another one is it was stolen along the border, which previously, up till now even, has been very uncommon. We've had checkpoints, CBP checkpoints, north and south of the U.S. border ever since NAFTA, right? And they check every commercial vehicle that crosses through them, checking their paperwork, et cetera. What that means is that organized cargo criminals really didn't want to mess with any area near the U.S. border because there was that barrier to them crossing farther into the country to liquidate that product. I'm not saying cargo theft didn't happen. Cargo theft definitely happened along the border. It just wasn't as much as you would expect for how dense cargo traffic was. And it was because anything that was stolen in that area would have to be liquidated in that area. Now, one of the things that's changed in the last 3 years, 3.5 years, is it's become standard operating procedure for some of these organized to alter the paperwork, alter the bill of lading as part of their theft scheme. When you do that, when you're creating new paperwork, you're essentially laundering that freight, right? The process of the standard operating procedure of stealing that freight now gives you the paperwork that you need to go and cross those checkpoints. It also gives you the paperwork you need to deal with any of the various state agencies that all independently control the movement and sale of alcohol within their borders, right? So that's a double whammy there. Alcohol has previously been very infrequently hit because paperwork required to liquidate it. And the area near the border on the U.S. side has been, you know, a relatively low activity area. Now that criminals are, by matter of course, creating new paperwork for the loads they steal, it's opening up not just new geographical areas of the country, it's opening up new product verticals as well that they used to be much more difficult for them, specifically alcohol and tobacco.
So folks, Danny mentioned paperwork a couple times. Don't assume that if you have a highly digitized supply chain that you may be immune, because we're going to touch on some of the ways that the bad folks, the bad actors are compromising even the modern digital tools we use, platforms we use across global supply chain. Really quick, Yassine, let's see here. He mentioned whoever eats Cadbury eggs year round, those are my kind of people. So I got to go connect with them. But he mentioned Cadbury eggs, aged tequila, and of course, using, you know, paperwork, changing paperwork to help fool even the shrewdest of authorities. What'd you hear there from Danny, Yassine?
I think I'm really interested in kind of like returning back. You know, Danny, we've talked a lot about like physical assets. So, you know, like we've talked about chocolate or we've talked about like these Cadbury eggs. But when it comes to tequila, which is obviously like a liquid, like how do you think probably there's a way to actually like just kind of repackage this kind of this alcohol into like another state or into like a kind of different packaging? It doesn't necessarily have to be in its original bottle, right?
Yeah, but that would be more work. And criminals are like water. They're going to go for the path of least resistance, right? The stolen tequila, there's two containers of it that were stolen. One of them was recovered. The other one wasn't. And my bet is that that tequila is unchanged, aside from, you know, maybe improper storage, unchanged on store shelves right now. That's what they want. They want to sell it with as little work as possible and make as much money as possible.
It is
scary how easy it is to reinsert illicit goods into the legitimate supply chain.
It right? is.
Part of it is, you know, it's 2026 and this is an industry that still runs on ink and paper with lading and things like that, right? And it's largely because we operate on fractured systems.
And those fractured systems, you know, the change point controls where they all connect, those oftentimes are big weaknesses, whether it's for the thieves in this case or really processes to break down and much, much more. Hey, really quick, all of this really is why you've got to be more informed. And I spent some of my weekend diving into some research y'all recently put out there, Danny, our friends at Overhaul. They released a 2025 U.S. and Canada cargo theft report. And I want to ask you, I'm sharing an image of just the first of many, many pages. Love the breakdown. And by the way, if y'all can see that red dotted chart line there, that's what's projected for 2026. And guess what? It's not going down. But Danny, tell us some of the key takeaways from this research.
A couple of key takeaways for me. One is 2025 saw a 16% increase year over year from 2024. That's already a significant percentage, but you have to kind of take a step back and put that into context, that is after a solid half decade of record-shattering increases year over year, quarter after quarter, continued. So this is not just a 16% jump. It is a 16% jump on top of 5 years of record-breaking jumps, right?
Right.
So this is the new normal. The new normal is continued sustained increase in risk. And as you mentioned, you know, looking at that red dotted line, we're projecting another 13% increase over the course of 2026. So far, we're on track to exceed that. You know, global events, socioeconomics, what they are, whenever things go up in demand and become harder to get and or more expensive, they become targets for theft, right? But the other thing that has been kind of happening in general over our reports that we release every quarter is that cargo theft has grown to such a different game now. Pre-pandemic, pre-COVID, it was very much, you'd look at it and everything was trending one main type of cargo theft, which was straight theft, which is, you know, I'm just going to take the tractor trailer from the driver when he's not looking, when he's not around, right? But now we've got, you know, strategic thefts, fraudulent thefts, which are stealing shipments under the guise of doing legitimate business with a couple dozen different MOs that they can mix, match, and layer, right? Some of them use technology, some of them use social engineering, some of them use various other methods. And then we've got large-scale pilferage crews, where pilferage used to be just like, you know, punk kids popping the back doors on trailers in a truck stop in the middle of the night, hoping maybe they'd find a PlayStation or something. Now we're dealing with professional crews who have gained in tradecraft, reinvested into their operations in terms of hardware, and are able to bucket brigade an entire 53-foot trailer empty in less than 10 minutes. Very clear that they're not working by the hour, right? So now when we look at these trends that are in the report, because these are umbrella trends, right? You can't really pick out the trends that we used to be able to pick out because we're not looking at one type of crime. We're looking at cargo theft split across three different arenas, and each of those arenas has different subsets within it, you know? And so people will look at those maps, and those maps are great. I always warn people, don't just apply security where the map is red and forget about security where the map is green, because risk isn't necessarily defined by geography. A lot of times, most times, risk is defined by what's in the truck and where did you come from, because that determines who's coming after you and what methods they're going to use to try and take your cargo.
So before I share this next thought and Yassine get you to comment, I want to just double down on Danny's disclaimer, right? Don't read into these hotspots I'm going to share and think that that's like 100% of all data. Let's see here. Cargo theft in the U.S. continues to show higher incidence. This is from Danny's research. Near freight hubs in large cities, leading the hotspots in states such as California and Texas, which ranked first and second in terms of cargo theft risk. In particular, cities of Memphis, Dallas, and right here in the ATL, hotspots for illicit activity and losing cargo and freight. Sectors, electronics, 22%. That might be intuitive. That's followed by food and drinks. That might be kind of going back to our Cadbury eggs and tequila. Home and garden and clothing and shoes. I know the shoes part, but the clothing makes sense too. Yassine, there's a whole bunch of actionable, I think, advice and really some startling facts and figures here. Your thoughts?
I really enjoying your insights and your advice here, Danny. But like I think there's an inkling that I think these kind of rising kind of theft and pilferage that we're finding in these supply chains is due to kind of the cost of the rising cost of living, right? I would attribute it to the rising cost of living, kind of the hardship that people are having to resort to kind of living a life of theft and kind of stealing these assets. So I was very interested to see that 43% of this theft is helpful. It is simply just pilferage, right? Like just kind of like you mentioned. Sorry if you can hear this the siren in the background. Scott's always lucky with the ambulances in New York. But
they're going to get the bad actors, Yassine. That's good news. You're going to get the bad actors.
At least you know that it's not a pre-record and that we're actually shooting live. But
that's right. I want to take what you said there, Yassine. I want to take what you said and just ask Danny this really quick. I know y'all done research for a long time. Do y'all see a linkage between inflation rates and higher costs to higher cargo theft activity?
Yeah, 100%, right? As I mentioned before, you know, the change in the criminal structure, criminal direct to consumer, means that cost density is no longer the number one driver of desire for these thieves and what they're targeting, right? It's still a factor. The most value I can squeeze into every cubic inch is going to make it more attractive. But because I'm no longer delivering it to my boss, who's going to deliver it to the fence, and I'm going to get paid as soon as I drop it off, my desire is to get paid as quickly as possible. So the quicker I can sell it, the quicker I can liquidate it, the quicker I can turn my criminal efforts into cash.
Right.
Is going to be the number one driver, right? And when we look at, you know, who's committing cargo theft, I mean, yeah, there are the folks who are pressed into it by economic hardship. There's also, you know, multiple crews operating in the United States, unfortunately, who are connected to transnational criminal organizations of the worst caliber.
Oh, right? Man.
And we're talking like they've got resources and knowledge and networks at their disposal that we, until recently, have not really been assuming that they had. But we've, you know, assisted in the recovery of cargo and the capture of organized cargo thieves. One comes to mind in California. This is just one example. Comes to mind in California. I can't remember if it was two or three folks were arrested, but there were two fully automatic weapons that were recovered with high capacity magazines, $50,000 in cash, and 2 pounds of methamphetamines.
Wow.
Right. These are Walter White levels of illicit substances. Right. These folks are connected to some of the worst organizations on the planet. And unfortunately, that gives them, you know, a pipeline into illicit narcotics. It gives them a pipeline into human trafficking, where they can bring in folks in the indentured servitude style of like, hey, you've got to pay your trip off now. So we're going to make you a truck driver and you're going to do things and not ask questions.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Well, hey,
crazy.
It is getting crazy. And that Walter White reference, you know, it's kind of halfway kid and half not, because, you know, trains are not immune. We've seen train heists and acts of thievery there too. Hey, for the sake of time, Danny, we're having way too much fun. Really enjoy learning from you and Yassine both. I'm going to ask you a two-part question just for the sake of time. I want you, if you would, touch on how bad actors are exploiting those digital tools that we kind of teased earlier. And then number two, give us two or three things that folks got to do to help mitigate, you know, this growing risk. And your thoughts on those two questions.
So like I mentioned before, right, the supply chain is operating off of fractured systems. Nobody's operating on the same system except for the systems that are mandated, right, federally for people to use. And that's where it's exploited, because people are, how should I put this? People are expecting those tools to do more than they are designed to do. They are not security tools. They are simply compliance tools to occasionally check on location and things like that. They don't have the detailed information you need to actually check on the condition of your cargo or the state of your supply chain, right? And criminals are using that. They know the systems. They've been embedded in the supply chains for years at this point. They know where the gaps are. They know where the vulnerabilities are, and they're exploiting that. Now, when it comes to what companies need to do, it's
right.
For me, it's always visibility. You can't fix a problem that you don't know that you have, or if you don't know the source of that problem. There's so many potential vulnerabilities in a supply chain that unless you've got granular visibility, you're not going to know where the actual problem is, and you're not going to know that you probably have multiple vulnerabilities that need to be addressed in rank order, right? Because like I mentioned, criminals are like water, looking for the path of least resistance. They've got a couple dozen different technology and AI-enabled methods that they can use to penetrate your security. And if you only patch one vulnerability, they have a path of escalation that they can follow.
All right. Yassine, you know what? Folks, Danny, I bet your LinkedIn and your email may be blowing up here in a minute, because a lot of folks can use a Danny Ramone right now. And if you don't realize why you not, might need Danny Ramone, we need to sit down and have a separate conversation. Yassine, react to how Danny addressed both of those. You know, bad actors are compromising our digital systems thanks to the fractured nature of global supply chain, maybe. And then, of course, what to do about it. Yassine, your thoughts?
I think, you know, coming from South Africa, I think pilferage and kind of logistics and freight theft is a big issue. But I think, you know, Danny has really brought to, you know, has put in a spotlight how sophisticated some of these organizations kind of going to the extent to really get the product that they're looking for and these kind of assets that they're looking to steal. But super thankful for Danny's time. I've really enjoyed today's conversation.
I have too. Got a couple of quick comments there. First off, folks, go check out the report that I mentioned earlier, right? The overhaul is providing. It's easy to download. It's chock full of nuggets, data-driven nuggets. That's going to surprise you. And Trisha's dropped a link right there. Amanda says, this is so fascinating to me. So consumers could be, and in some cases likely are, purchasing stolen goods right off store shelves.
More often than you might think.
Wow, how about that? Elias says, cargo theft is now considered a standard cost of doing business, with costs ultimately passed on to consumers.
Costs are definitely passed on. I think a lot of folks aren't aware that it is part of the cost that they're including to consumers. Only the folks who are plugged in and have that visibility are aware that it is affecting their bottom line.
Man, okay. Eye-opening conversation here on The Buzz, powered by our friends at DOS. All right, so folks, we're going to make sure you know how to connect with Danny and the overall team and Yassine in just a second. But again, I would urge you, at least one action you got to take today is go download this report and check it out. You know, don't take our word for it. Go find what the data right there will say. All right, so before we close here, I'll offer a couple other resources. Number one, if you like truly live conversations, as Yassine has called out, right? If this was recorded, we would have done some magical editing on the good folks going after the bad guys there in New York. But hey, if you like live programming, check out all of our scheduled upcoming live programming. We're going to drop a link to do that, because you don't want to miss episodes like this Friday live. We've got a talent management playbook for supply chain leaders. We got the Rodney Apple, who's joined by Chris Gaffney and my dear friend Scott DeGroote, have done big things with some big supply chain organizations that are going to offer up some actionable tips. So you want to join us this Friday. Then the Resource Hub, right? Where great things like that report, you'll find ebooks, white papers, and much, much more. Really exciting stuff, Yassine and Danny. I'm not doing it justice. But folks, check out this thing from our friends at Optilogic. Supply Chain Decision Velocity starts with data agility. You're going to find how organizations can make better, faster, more confident supply chain decisions. You'll find that and so many other resources in our aptly named Resource Hub. Okay, so Danny Ramon, I really enjoyed your perspective. I know it's just a tip of the iceberg. That hour went by, or the 45 minutes or so we spent with you went by so fast. How can folks connect with you and the great folks over at Overhaul?
Yeah, if you don't catch that link that Scott put up there, you can always look us up at over-hall.com. All of our reports are available there, not just for the U.S. and Canada, but also Mexico, Brazil as well. And you can always look me up on LinkedIn, Danny Ramon of Overhaul. I'm always doing my best to put out open source, sometimes privileged source, actionable intelligence that can affect your decision-making across the supply chain.
Outstanding, Danny. Outstanding. And I think this is Felix, by the way, who says, great session. Thanks, guys. We'll be on the lookout for those Kit Kats. Felix, call me when you find them. Call me. Okay. And Trisha has also dropped Overhaul. And again, that's over, if you're listening to the podcast replay, over-hall.com. Check that out. And she's dropped Danny's LinkedIn profile. One click away, folks. We're trying to make it easy. Yassine Ahmed, I really have enjoyed your perspective once again. You always join us for big shows here. How can folks track you down, whether they want to pick your brain on some of the boards you sit on, or some of your thoughts on the now generation, or of course, optimizing their resume? How can folks track you down?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Scott. And thanks, Danny. I really enjoyed today's talks. But yeah, happy for you to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me Yassine Ahmed, just as my name is here. Yeah, you can also connect with me through Luna, which is our resume review service. It's luna-resume.com.
Outstanding. It's just that easy. And Maria, I'm with you. I thought that was a great session. Danny and Yassine brought it. Very actionable session. And hope this finds you well in a beautiful country of Spain. Let's see here. Trisha dropped Yassine's LinkedIn handle as well as Luna. Luna-resume.com. Check it out. All right, folks. Really have enjoyed today's excellent edition of The Buzz. We went over by about 2 minutes. My bad. Hey, I want to thank Danny Ramon with Overhaul. Danny, thanks so much for being here, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Scott. It was great.
You bet. It was very informative, very actionable. I want to thank my fantastic co-host, Yassine Ahmed. Yassine, thanks so much for being here, my friend.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Big thanks to our friends at DOSS. Folks, learn more about the innovative things they're doing at DOSS.com. Of course, big thanks to Amanda and Trisha behind the scenes making production happen each and every time. Most importantly, big thanks to our global audience for being here with us. Loved all the feedback. I know we couldn't hit everybody's comment and question. Great to have y'all here on the second to last Monday of April 2026. Hard to believe. Here's the homework, folks. You know, Danny and Yassine both brought plenty. Take one thing you heard here today from Danny or Yassine and do something with it. Share it with your team. Put it into practice, right? It's all about deeds, not words. That's how we're going to keep transforming global supply chain and secure our ecosystems, all the bad actors out there. And with all that said, on behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton challenges you, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.